This show is brought to you by OffWorldDesigns.com. OffWorldDesigns.com is the place where you can find the nerdiest t-shirts and more at prices that won't break the bank. OffWorldDesigns.com offers shirts from all fandoms and hobbies, and even some other pretty cool stuff like messenger bags that can hold your plus one sort of awesome and so much more. You can use promo code GEEKSRULE to get 10% off your entire order. OffWorldDesigns.com is a proud sponsor of ThisWeekInGeek.net. Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geeks, the Nerd News Network, and I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. And well, guys, today is Friday, June 6, 2014, and I'm in a lot of pain today. Over the past week, I had something rather unfortunate to me, and I picked up a bit of an infection. I have this thing on my face, and that's kind of affecting how I talk. So if you hear me talking a little bit funny today, that's why. I'm on heavy-duty antibiotics, as well as a crap ton of anti-inflammatories, and I pretty much live with an ice pack attached to my head 24/7 for the next 10 to 14 days. It kind of sucks, just so you know. But anyway, guys, got a lot of cool stuff coming up. This week, you're going to get a new prototype. Probably tomorrow, I'm guessing Saturday, might do another review show, but without Blair, simply because there is a lot of stuff to talk about involving books, and I have a lot of stuff to read. I got a new Pathfinder book from Paizo. I got some books from the WWE that I want to talk about. How to Train Your Dragon on Blu-ray, and a documentary on the universe, and some new Ninja Turtles toys. So that'll probably come up early next week, I'm guessing Monday or Tuesday. Might actually do another Birdman's Toy Chest over the weekend, too, just to talk about Ghostbusters toys. As you guys know, I've been collecting toys for the last little bit, and I'm basically going cheap. I'm going after G.I. Joe, Ninja Turtles, Ghostbuster stuff, basically rebuilding. In fact, right now, I'm working on restoring a Ghostbusters firehouse, which is really cool. I just need the right door of the actual main firehouse right now. So if you have this, please contact me, Mike, at thisweekingeek.net, or feedback at thisweekingeek.net. Be greatly appreciated. So, what are we going to be talking about on the show this week? Well, evidently, Harvard University had the Necronomicon, because they have a book that was officially bound in human skin. Don't like Google Glass? That's not a problem. We've got a solution for that. Who better to direct a serious movie about tactical espionage action? We're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be looking at the new trailer for Sailor Moon Crystal, which comes out, I think, first week of July, or something very similar to that. And also talking about a planet that is 11.5 billion years old. So not too much older, or not too much younger than the universe itself, and could it have life on it? So, a lot of cool stuff. Let's start off with the Necronomicon. Alright. Well, it's not really the Necronomicon, because it's not real, despite what they tell you. If anything, it's a creepy read that you can buy in Borders and on Amazon.com right now. So, back in April, Harvard University had confirmed that it had two books that were bound in human flesh. However, though, the third book, they weren't too sure about. One of them was actually discovered to be sheepskin. But this book from Houghton Library, or Houghton, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, copy of Arsène Houssay's Des Destinies de l'Homme, I'm pretty sure I just slaughtered that, it's French, I don't speak it, is without a doubt bound in human skin, Harvard confirmed Wednesday, after subjecting the book to peptide mass fingerprinting, a method of identifying proteins. The Langwell Law Library alleged human skin book went through the same process months ago, and was revealed to be sheepskin. However, though, this thing definitely is made out of the skin of a human being or some other closely related primate. A mass spectrometer helped rule out more primitive sources, making it more likely that a morbid note included in the book is accurate. It was covered in skin from the back of an unclaimed body of a woman patient in a French mental hospital who died suddenly of apoplexy. I'm not sure what that means. Oh my god. However, though, this is not the most gruesome part of all this. It turns out there are many accounts of similar occurrences in the 19th century in which the bodies of executed criminals were donated to science and the skins given to tanners and bookbinders. Holy shit, is that gross. And amazingly screwed up at the same time. I mean, a book bound in human flesh. Ugh, I'm actually just looking up seeing what this book is. Seeing what it talks about. Doesn't really say, actually. Let's see what this says. I'm trying to figure out, you know what? It doesn't give me any information, but you can look it up. I'm actually going to include the link here. I got the story from Gawker. Yeah, I know, the world's most reliable news source. But hey, they broke the Rob Ford story last year, so haha. Yeah, that's messed up. I can't imagine, oh, hey, we got the skin of this dead hooker, or this dead rapist. Can you do anything for it? Well, I don't know, I got a bunch of books I need done. What the hell is wrong with people? One of those days, folks, I'll tell you. The next story that I want to talk about, as you guys know, Google Glass, it's this cool thing you can wear. It's this wearable computer, the sort of augmented reality thing. Think of Watch Dogs, but you can wear it on your head. Basically popping up restaurant reviews, like Foursquare type crap. Basically putting the information superhighway right on your face. However, not everybody likes these. I mean, we've seen Google Glass used to watch people get arrested. We've watched people use it in restaurants. There was actually a story, I don't think I talked about this on Nerd News, but I'll mention it now. Woman went into a restaurant with a Google Glass. The restaurant asked her to take it off. She's like, nope, fuck that. And she had a bunch of other Google Glass users leave this place 1-star reviews on Google. Evidently really hurt the business. And they're like, well, we don't want our customers recorded. And that's something I can definitely understand. I mean, we do live in this era with privacy concerns and all sorts of other things. It's just, that's the world into which we live. We have to now be hyper aware of what's going on around us. Well, there's this artist, this Berlin artist named Julian Oliver, and he's wrote a program called Glasshole. And what this thing does, it detects any Google Glass device attempting to connect to a Wi-Fi network, and he's doing this based upon a unique character string that's found in the MAC address, which is, I forget what MAC stands for, but it's basically, if an IP address is your phone number, the MAC address is your home address, where you actually physically live. So it's physically there, as far as I can tell. So anyway, what this thing does is, if you install this program to like a Raspberry Pi or a BeagleBone mini computer and plug that into a USB network antenna, it becomes a Google Glass detector. And what this thing does, it uses a program called AirCrackNG to impersonate the network and send a deauthorization command, cutting off the headset's Wi-Fi connection. It can also emit a beep to signal the glass's wearer to signal that they're wearing this thing to anybody who's nearby. Now, this guy did offer a quote to Wired Magazine. And he says, to say I don't want to be filmed at a restaurant, at a party, or playing with your kids is perfectly okay. But how do you do that when you don't even know if a device is recording? This steps up the game. It's taking a jammer-like approach. And so what kind of stirred this idea is he came up with this idea when a guy wore this thing to an exhibit. I'm actually just going to read you the quote here. Oliver came up with the program after hearing that a fellow artist friend was disturbed by guests who showed up to his art exhibit wearing glass. The device, after all, offered no way for the artist to know if the glass-wearing visitors were photographing, recording, or even live-streaming his work. Now, this thing hasn't totally been tested. It's kind of on and off, on and off. And it's kind of messed up, because as I read this article on Wired, which I will post, a guy who went to the movie theater was questioned by Homeland Security. Another guy who was wearing this thing was thrown out of a McDonald's back in 2012. Man, I can't say I don't disagree with this, actually. If it literally says, like, you're in a public place, no recording, it makes a lot of perfect sense. I mean, obviously going to a movie theater, no shit. Going to a restaurant, yeah, no recording devices. I mean, kind of goes without saying, you know, when you go to public pools or stuff like that. I mean, I can see a lot of really creepy applications for Google Glass, as much as you look like a techno dork wearing this thing. I don't know, man. I mean, I'm perfectly happy looking stuff up on my iPhone. If I really need to know, is this Nando's chicken really good? I'm pretty sure I can tap the commands out on my computer or on my iPhone, as opposed to just having this thing tell me, this place has 3 stars. I don't know. I'm actually in kind of support of this. If it cuts off the Wi-Fi capability to live stream or to upload, it's not to say you can't be recording with this, because it's not technically jamming the recording capabilities of this thing. It just means it's not connecting to Wi-Fi. So I don't know whether you can network Google Glass to, say, Bluetooth or a hotspot to your Android or iPhone device. It's interesting, to say the very least. Like I said, can't see a big problem with this. Kind of hope someone develops it a little bit further, but there you have it. Moving on to my next story this week. Evidently, Sony Pictures is coming up closer to getting Metal Gear Solid to the big screen. And Deadline is reporting they may have found a director, or at least they're definitely talking with the guy. His name is Jordan Vogt Roberts, and he made a movie called Kings of Summer. I just watched the trailer for this, and the trailer describes it as a movie like Stand By Me and Superbad. It actually looks kind of funny, actually. Not quite what I was expecting. So they're talking to this guy. They're going to have Spider-Man producer A.V. Arad and Michael DeLuca overseeing for Sony themselves. Metal Gear Solid. I could see this actually not being a bad movie, depending on what they choose to adapt. I mean, I'm not expecting them to have, like, say, Raven or Sniper Wolf in it. I mean, I'm happy if they have Revolver Ocelot, they have, I'm guessing Psycho Mantis would be kind of a fun thing to have in there, and Liquid, and Liquid Snake, obviously Metal Gear Solid, or Metal Gear, and maybe have them foreshadow Rex or something, and obviously have Otacon and stuff like that. This could be actually be really cool, depending on how closely they're allowed to follow it. Now, because when you think about it, it's just, it's probably easier than most other video game adaptions, as opposed to Resident Evil, which has the more fantastic of zombies and shit, and we saw how well Sony handles that property, to other things. I mean, I'd like to see them do Metal Gear and maybe Splinter Cell as movies. I think they might be easier to pull off than what people think. It's just the problem with Metal Gear, you have all this ridiculous lore, and it gets super complicated when you get into Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty, and yada, 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 yada. At least the first one, yeah, it's got a lot of lore. It's got a lot of things to say about genetic enhancements and whatnot. It's been a long time since I've played it, but still, I think they could do it. If you give it a good 2-hour, 2.5-hour runtime, you get the right people behind it. I'd love to see David Hayter involved in some capacity. Maybe have him do a draft of the screenplay. And I think he has before. I'm not 100% sure of that. But still, that would be remarkably cool. So hopefully Sony gets somebody good locked in. I can't say I've got a bad feeling about this guy. Kind of an odd choice to me. I'm not sure who I would have do it, actually. I want someone who can approach it with a degree of seriousness, but someone who can have a little bit of fun with the source material. I don't know. Because I don't want to name anybody, like, people like, oh, I want Ridley Scott to do it. Although he wouldn't be a bad choice to do it, though. Maybe one of the guys who did one of the Bourne movies. Maybe the guy who did the first or second one. I don't know. I'd love to hear your guys' suggestions. So feedback at thisweekingeek.net, subject line Metal Gear, or the voicemail line, which, like I said, I'm pretty sure it works right now. So 817-717-7202. Definitely want to hear from you. Let me know what you think about that. In other movie-related news, or at least media anyway, Sailor Moon, as you guys know, you can catch new episodes on Hulu, I think like every Monday or something like that. And this summer, there's going to be the new Sailor Moon Crystal. So, I'm going to embed the trailer for this so you guys can see what I'm talking about. It's about a minute trailer. It shows Usagi and, you know, the rest of the Sailor Scouts. Serena in the English dub. I don't know. Are they doing a dub for this? Pretty sure they are. Anyway. So, saw the trailer. It doesn't look right. And I don't know. Certain animes, they look a little too clean. And this one looks just, it looks a little too sharp, a little too vivid. But I guess with the original Sailor Moon, I was expecting it to look like the 90s cartoon. The designs are pretty similar, except when I link you guys the trailer in IO9 in the description, they actually talk about it. They have these incredibly long legs. And on 15 and 16 year old girls, it just looks a little bit weird. Out of the Sailor Scouts design, I like Sailor Venus's and I like Sailor Jupiter's probably the most. But then again, they are my two favorite Sailor Scouts, so I'm probably a little bit biased in that regard. I don't know about this. I'm very curious to see where they're going to take this. However, because of this, I'm kind of taking an interest in Sailor Moon again. I might actually do an episode or a series of episodes for These Warriors Are Terrible. I do have the Sailor Moon RPG. So if you guys want to tweet at Dice Warriors on Twitter, say, hey, Birdman, run Sailor Moon. If I get enough responses, I'll actually do it. I think that'd be cool. I'd like to get an all-female cast for that one, or at least a mix of people. It could be a lot of fun. Definitely looking forward to that. Speaking of Terrible Warriors, I did a game last week with Tom. He's an Evil Genius White, one of the many guys who worked with us over on the site. He did a game called Wild Talents. Supremely badass. I'm looking forward to when that's actually coming out. So you should see that in just a little over a month. What else can I talk about? Oh, yes. My final story this week is they found the oldest known planet that might support life. Now, this thing is only 13 light years away. This planet is 11.5 billion years old, makes it twice as old as the Earth, to maybe almost three times. And it's only 2 billion years younger than the universe itself, which sprang into existence 13.8 billion years ago. And it's kind of cool. So they talked to this the guy who led this study, and that's Gilliam... my God. You know what? Okay. A guy from the Queen Mary University of London. I can't pronounce his name. Once again, I'll link this. The planet is called Kipton B. And there's another planet they discovered called Kipton C. And they orbit this nearby red dwarf. Now, this planet is called a super-Earth. It means it's about five times as massive as our planet. And it's likely potentially habitable. The other one is a little too farther, or far away from the star to likely support life. What it means is this thing is in the habitable zone to support liquid water. The only thing is, it has a rotation. I think it does a rotation around the star every 48 days. The other one, I think, is 121. So, interesting stuff. And it's kind of funny. I've actually been doing a lot of reading into aliens' life and how we explore the thing with, like, the Kepler telescope and all that stuff. And one theory that I've heard about alien life, and bear with me here, there's a possibility. Like I've said many times on the show, we're probably not alone in the universe. But there's a possibility we may have missed it. And they're talking about humans have only rose up in the last, like, million years, like, last 50,000 years of civilization. I don't know. Something like that. Either way, we've been around in a geological blink of an eye. If there was intelligent life out there, it may already be gone. Or, alternatively, I know Stephen Hawking said if there is intelligent life out there, maybe it's not a good idea for us to be broadcasting our presence. The example he gives, natives, which I am, versus the English. It didn't work out too well for my people, and I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this on a previous show. But yeah, Still, though, just the fact that that they found it and we can detect it, and the fact that you can actually see this with, like, Earth-based telescopes, that's pretty awesome, in fact. I know you can see this star with an actual telescope. I think even amateur telescopes here. I'm just trying to see if I can find it where it mentions that. Just give me a sec here, guys. Now, they're actually theorizing that this star originally belonged to a dwarf galaxy that the Milky Way actually absorbed a long time ago, and this thing may have came from someplace entirely different. Now, they think the dwarf galaxy was likely Omega Centauri, which is a cluster about 16,000 light years away that contains many thousands of stars that are around 11.5 billion. It's kind of incredible, and you really look at the celestial math, as it were. And if there's anything that gives me hope for extraterrestrial life out there, or basically, if there ever was evidence for a creator, and this is just my personal thing, so the views and opinions expressed of Mike the Birdman Dodd do not necessarily reflect those of ThisWeekInGeek.net, nor its affiliates or sponsors. That being said, when you look at how perfectly the math works out for stars and galaxies and gravity and all these things we take as the laws of reality, as we understand it, they're almost a little too perfect. So, something for you to speculate tonight as you look up into the stars tonight and see those many millions or billions of balls of gas burning away in space. Just look up there and think about that. Celestial math. How are we not dead? We're just in the right perfect place, right place, right time. Who's to say? So anyway, guys, that's pretty much going to do it for this edition of the Nerd News Network. As you guys saw on the site this week, we had the topic show with me and Andrew Randrew Roebuck. Such an odd nickname for that kid. There's going to be a new prototype on Saturday. I'm actually going to Toronto. As of this recording, I should have already left. I'm recording a television pilot with MTV today. Think of it as kind of like Beat the Geeks meets Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader. That's all I really know about it. So I will have filmed two TV pilots this year. Hopefully they go to series. So hopefully Birdman will be coming to a Canadian television station near you in the hopeful future. Because I love podcasting, but being on TV would be pretty sweet. And they get to deal with this giant goddamn thing on my face. So hopefully there'll be an awesome makeup crew there. But anyway, guys, lots of cool stuff. We're going to be doing a Birdman's Boombox. Or not Boombox. I haven't done one of those in like a year or two. A Birdman's Toy Chest. Probably talking about Ghostbuster stuff. And this is a serious call out to my listeners there. If you guys have any old toys like Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, Ghostbusters. You know what? Let me know. I may be interested in talking with you. So Mike at ThisWeekInGeek.net, keep me informed. But until next time, guys, have yourself a fantastic weekend. Go out there, see the stars, have a bonfire. I know I'm going to. Until next time, guys, live free or die hard. I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, and I'll catch you guys again next week, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? That 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Whoa, my God, whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they
They don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by at replying to at This Week in Geek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.